So we're going to connect with Philip Rossetti from the R Street Institute coming up here in just a minute. The title of the column, which I love his column. His column's called Low Energy Fridays. He writes about energy. Industrial policy for climate is a mirage. Rossetti states, I often hear about how we should look to industrial policy to address climate change. The idea is that we should use the power of government to force certain industries into existence or to bolster key industries. Advocates assert that this is a new theory that relies on the same modern, sophisticated economic understanding, or that the problem it would address is so great it justifies any cost. In truth, this is the same central planning paradigm that has been attempted many times before. While I appreciate and respect the intent of the pro-industrial policy camp, it's important to recognize that there are three major reasons why it never works out, as has hoped. Joining us now to talk about this, picking it up from there, would be Philip Rossetti from the R Street Institute. Philip, good morning. Welcome back. How are you, man?
Good morning. How are you doing?
Doing very well this morning. Okay, there are three major reasons why industrial policy for climate has never worked. What are those three reasons?
Yeah, so the first big one is this thing called the knowledge problem. So basically, everyone has the best information for themselves as to what they need. A government bureaucrat isn't going to know that better than you can yourself. So when they're responsible for making decisions on your behalf, everything is going to end up inherently less efficiently. The ordering of capital, as we call it, in economics, you know, more money is going to be put into things that people don't need and less money into things people actually want and can. The second big reason is this thing called comparative advantage. It's obvious to everyone that some people are better at tasks than others. You know, some people are much better singers and artists than I am. I certainly can't do that, but I benefit from them being better at it than I have that. And there are also regions that are better at certain things. You know, Florida can produce oranges better than Alaska can. And this comparative advantage is why trade is actually so important and why we benefit from this sort of heterogeneity of skills and talents and industries across the whole world. And industrial policy advocates tend to ignore that. They think if we just pump enough money into an industry, then we're going to be just as good at it as another country, or that one person can do something just as well as another. And it kind of ignores that there are institutions that surround successful industries that are built up entirely around that. That's why, you know, Taiwan is so good at chip manufacturing, and we can't just subsidize our way into it as well as they can. But the last big reason, and the most important reason really, is that there's this inherent entanglement between our social liberty and our economic liberty. And this is something that this economist named Friedrich Hayek really championed back in 1945. He escaped from Austria before it was annexed by Germany, right before World War II. And he kind of saw how this trend of government intervention into economics actually starts to restrict people's liberties, because once you start taxing industries and doing away with them or steering them towards purposes that the government dictates, you're restricting people's opportunities for human flourishing. You know, if your industry, you know, you're on the radio right now, if the government says, hey, we're going to tax radio show hosts to pay for solar panels, your opportunities to succeed in life are going to be restricted to try to prop up that industry. So it's all on a spectrum, but when we start going down this route, it actually is going to worsen outcomes for human prosperity.
Is there room for change here, or is this something that just should be flushed?
So it's all kind of the same paradigm of saying, hey, you know, we're going to have a government priority and we're going to address it. Now, there are times when it makes sense to have government oriented towards something like this. You know, you look at the common defense. You know, we all have an incentive to free ride on the defense that others might provide. So it's kind of this what they call a collective action problem. And that's what government is supposed to address. It's supposed to say, hey, here are things that the market is not going to bring about on its own. So therefore, you know, it justifies some sort of policy that creates an industry that the market wouldn't have an incentive to create. But this isn't one of those times. You know, we all consume energy. We all buy energy. The market is actually functioning incredibly well. Mm-hmm. there's a huge amount of investment. And it's just in the news today that there's more investment in clean energy than any other year prior. It was $270 billion last year. So it doesn't make sense that we should be propping up these industries with more subsidies, more sweetheart deals, and more industrial policy type of interventions.
Philip Rossetti from the R Street Institute is our guest. We're talking about his column titled Industrial Policy for Climate is a Mirage. Philip, when you talk about that comparative advantage, there's examples where some people in some places do things better than others. That's 1,000% true. But there's also, when you talk about comparative advantage, we're looking at a federal government and a global market. Are we not just hindering our own companies to the benefit of places around the world where we have no oversight?
I think that's absolutely true. Yeah, you look at China and people say, hey, that's a country that does industrial policy well, and they're just glossing over the fact that China doesn't have the same level of environmental regulation that we do. They don't have the same labor standards that we do. They don't have the same wages that we do. So when people say, hey, we should look at China as a success, you know, I think most of us should, or really all of us, should say, hey, we don't want to be like China. We don't want low wages. We don't want low standards for environmental quality. We want to, you know, look at what we do well, and those are things we want to emphasize and make sure that investors can actually be free to pursue that. You know, Louisiana is actually a great example because Louisiana is a huge location for the export of liquefied natural gas, mm-hmm. which is actually something that usually displaces foreign coal, in fact, and also displaces foreign natural gas. So U.S. produced LNG shipped to Europe is actually about 40% lower emission on a life cycle perspective than Russian natural gas. So it makes a lot of sense to say, hey, you know, this is something we do well. It's good for the environment. It's good for the U.S. economy. That's what we should be focused on instead of saying, hey, let's try to outproduce China on solar panels.
Within that, though, when you create policy, especially on a federal level, when you create policy, you get embedded into following that policy. However, the science does seem to, well, I shouldn't say the science, the hype behind the science does seem to follow a cause du jour. It's tough to write something into law or to write something into policy, pivot your business model only to have something else be more, you know, more important, and I'm air quoting that, more important the next day.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And this is one of the things that us at R Street have really focused on with what's called the Defense Production Act, which is this law from 1950, and it gives the press an enormous authority to intervene in the economy. And it really wasn't used much until recently. But one of our issues with this is that when the president is intervening and subsidizing select industries and exempting certain industries from government regulation, what they're doing is they're sending a signal to these investors that, hey, all that matters is lobbying the government instead of actually producing products that are good and that consumers want to buy. So this is absolutely a huge problem and a reason why we need to look to the market to steer these decisions rather than government.
We have 1 minute to go with Philip Rossetti from the R Street Institute. Okay, so I'm going to go back to the question of, is it worth even trying at this point? Like, if you are the federal government, how do you manage this moving forward?
I think there are ways that we can try to rein this in. You know, one is we need to look at reforming laws like the Defense Production Act, remove their ability for the president to essentially act unilaterally. Mm-hmm. We need to look at subsidies that were passed under the Inflation Reduction Act and say, hey, are these actually worthwhile? Can we afford to support them? Should we start reining these in? I definitely think that this is a path that can be pursued to reduce industrial policy in the U.S. Suite of tools. And I do think it's worthwhile to do that.
He is Philip Rossetti with the R Street Institute. Great stuff as always, man. We greatly appreciate it. The column's called Industrial Policy for Climate as a Mirage. By the way, Low Energy Fridays is a fantastic title. Philip, I always appreciate the time, man.
Thank you for having me.